It's Tuesday, post-Brazilian Grand Prix. My name is F. Knowles. Really, it's Ryan. And I'm here with my boy, Pouchon, over in La France. What's going on, buddy?
Man, we got hit with a big storm here on the Atlantic. So a lot of rain the last few days, but it's finally good to see some sun here.
I saw it, dude. I saw a bunch of surfers that I follow on the gram making their way over to France and the Iberian Peninsula.
So, yeah, crazy. I mean, good
that
luck
thing
to
looks huge,
good,
fucking purple.
Good luck to them, because it looked terrible out there. But
scary. Yeah,
someone's got to do it.
Yeah, dude. But also scary this weekend. There were some ominous clouds in Brazil this weekend. Black as night. Those clouds in Brazil at Interlagos. That was crazy. And also during qualifying.
Yeah, when they red flagged it. It doesn't matter what time of the year we go to Brazil. If it's like the beginning of the year, the end of the year, it always seems to throw rain. And when it rains there, it's like I think Alonso said, it's like, is it nighttime all of a sudden? Yeah, it's like, and there are no lights on that track.
No lights at all. It was, dude, I mean, it reminded me of like when I was a kid living in the Midwest and storms, like the sky would go almost dark green. It was very ominous, but.
I love it.
Dude. Okay, fucking weirdo.
No, I think it's awesome that like conditions can change that much for racing. Yeah.
Yeah, dude, we were back in Brazil, one of our favorite tracks on the grandstand. There was a lot of Senna tributes this weekend.
Yeah, like, yeah, there more, usually is.
There
yeah.
usually are, but I felt like there were more than usual, and obviously, we're approaching 30 years since we lost the great Ayrton Senna. So that might be in the back.
Yeah, next year.
Yeah.
But I think, I mean, you know, usually there's always the Lewis, obviously, because, right. You know, he's
an honorary citizen.
Yeah, honorary citizen. He loves Brazil because he's such a Senna fan. But yeah, you're right. There's a lot of younger drivers. I think it was Gasly, Ocon, Leclerc, who went to visit the Senna Foundation. I think the Senna family likes to invite these newer drivers as well to keep it going. I think it's cool. I think it's great to go pay tribute to great Ayrton.
Yeah. 100%. Well, we got a lot to talk about. It was a pretty, I mean, busy weekend. So let's roll that intro and get it going.
A question for all of you except Romain Grosjean.
To whom it may concern, fuck you.
Access to some women. There's too many dudes.
I don't really have a lot to comment on that, except that he was being a pussy.
Boom. Just quickly, so we sometimes have Felipe Massa as a commentator on the weekends, and I think the big question we were wondering is, was he going to show up this weekend? And
oh, you mean after he's suing F1 to get a title back that he lost 15 years ago in Brazil?
Yeah, that thing.
Yeah,
that little. really curious to see if he would show up and in what capacity he would show up, because, you know, obviously it's a home race for him, but I've made it clear how I feel about that whole thing. So
Yeah, I think we both agree. And the answer is he did show up. He did not show up, though, as an ambassador wearing the little Formula One polo, the official F1 ambassador role. He was invited just as a Brazilian. And I think a lot of TV cameras stayed away from him. And obviously, because he did send out a letter and he's suing to try to get a title that he lost. But he was there for a brief second. I didn't see much of him. You would expect to see way more of him, usually.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I'm not sure who, between what Felipe Massa is doing right now and just Nico Rosberg's general like dislike I have of Nico Rosberg, I'm not sure who I'd prefer at this point to be giving commentary. If I had to choose who it would be. Ooh, but
that's saying something about how I feel about Massa there.
Yeah, I mean, it's approaching levels that are unseen in sport, frankly. But before we get into the race, I do have a quick thing that came up pre-race, and it's related to the Andretti saga with Formula One, and basically the amount of pushback that he's been getting and seeing from the current teams. And he basically came out and said that he thinks that the current teams, which I believe includes Haas, think that the Andretti Autosport operation are just a bunch of hillbillies.
Was that a direct quote?
Yeah.
Hillbillies. Wow. Wait.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Andretti thought that everyone was out to get him when he was in F1, and he got kicked out. So,
which like I think was probably true, frankly.
Yeah.
He didn't perform.
We'll never know. Yeah, but if he's saying shit like this, I don't know if that's going to help his bid to get the teams
The Andretti's have a very funny way of rubbing people the wrong way. So,
his dad didn't, though.
No,
I feel
his dad didn't, but his dad's been a little bit more vocal in the last few years. Marco, his son, has said some really egregious shit every now and then.
Oh God, we've lost him.
Yeah, I think what he needs to do is keep his mouth shut and let this thing run its course and just show that they can bring value to the sport. But I thought it was funny that he was like, they all think we're a bunch of hillbillies, which is ironic considering that Gene Haas has a team in NASCAR. So that sounds like
what are you saying about NASCAR? Yeah, no, we know what you're saying. yeah, like you think he'd wait for the next US race, but yeah. Well, hey Andretti.
We've got
good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck. I mean, he's got a lot of support behind him, so we'll see. But anyway, I thought that was interesting and will play out more obviously in the next few weeks and months, but
I missed that. Yeah. Thanks for bringing it up.
We're back in Interlagos, and dude, the sprint was I thought the sprint was really exciting. I don't know.
You liked it?
I did. I enjoyed it. Even though Max won. I still thought it was pretty exciting.
Interesting. Okay, cuz for the start's always super interesting in Interlagos, but I thought that everyone kind of settled in a bit of a rhythm and it was just a bit of a procession, I thought, the sprint.
I mean, granted I was watching kind of on and off during the sprint.
Well, that's saying something already.
No, but I walked away from is that drivers were racing at a level where they clearly still care about the points that they can acquire on a sprint weekend that they may not be able to get during a race.
Right. Yeah. No matter. I mean, even if the championships are all logged up, and done, they'll always be racing. Interesting you bring up the sprint. There is talk about changing up the format for next year so that qualifying for the sprint happens on the Friday and they switch the sprint to the morning on Saturday, and they change the rules of Parc Fermé where you can actually change your setup after the sprint and not be locked in after only 1 hour of free practice.
I think I'm starting to agree with that because
I wonder why.
we'll get into that too. But no, I think it relates to a lot of teams. And I also just don't really one free practice session and then going into qualifying for a race that's on Sunday to me is in not being able to tweak your car based on the setup that you have to me is absurd.
Yeah, because just to remind everyone, right now what happens is you get to the track, there's an hour of free practice, then you qualify on that Friday for the race on Sunday, and then the sprint is on Saturday, and it's its own event, but you can't change your car from Friday onwards. And they're trying to basically switch that up to open it up after sprints, that you can actually make some setup changes from what you learned perhaps in the sprint, which would make the sprint more interesting and the race more interesting, as it won't be just a repeat of the sprint.
Yeah. And
like we saw.
Yeah. And I just think that they've been trying to perfect this format, because it's the sprint format, yeah, and they've changed it how many times now? I think if they change it again, this will be the third time.
Yeah, it would be the third time.
So, because yeah, it's, you know, obviously we saw what happened in Austin with Charles and Lewis. I think some drivers hit out at the fact that, you know, to qualify for a race on Friday after having very little time in the car, you know, you don't know what your setup really should be. I think it throws everybody through a loop that, frankly, doesn't give us the best product either as fans.
I kind of like the fact they only have 1 hour to get things right. Yeah. But I do agree that you should be allowed to change if you made a mistake, right? And you should be able to learn from the sprint. And then Parc Fermé is actually when the cars are all locked up and no team member engineers are allowed to touch the car and even change anything except for safety concerns.
Right.
But yeah, let's see. We'll probably know more in the off season with those changes. But yeah, that would make it smoother and more exciting, I think, for all of us.
Yeah, so I mean, I thought the sprint was interesting. The biggest winner of the sprint was obviously AlphaTauri. I thought with Yuki finishing with 3 points, because that really does matter for them at this point.
Yeah, I like how we're skipping the fact that Max added another win there. But yeah, I mean,
whatever.
For what's at stake, you're absolutely right. AlphaTauri, a huge win.
At this point, it's just like there's. We can talk about it after the season and like really do an overview of the points haul that he's had. But I think now, yes, now we he's won the championship. He's just adding more to his resume that I think nobody's shocked by, because he's driving at an insane level. Like, and we're going to get into it in the race, and you know, let's get into the race, because for me, the start of this race changed the course of the rest of the race for me.
Yeah, how so? Are you referring to the crash?
Yes, obviously we had a crash at the start, red flag. I thought, given the red flag, it gave an advantage to Max.
How so?
Well, Max got off the line a lot better on the second restart than he did at the first.
So you think Lando could have challenged him?
I think there could have been more of a challenge from Lando at the beginning of the first start, I should say, the restart.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, interesting. I was disappointed, because I have two of those drivers that crashed out on the first lap in my fantasy lineup. But apparently Albon, who got sandwiched by both Haas drivers, he said he's been making the best starts in the last three races of the grid. And he said that sometimes it works for him and he shoots up the order and gains a lot of positions like he did in Mexico. And this time he was too close to the drivers and they didn't expect him. And once again, we had another racing incident where three cars going into one line does not work with these big, big cars.
No, they don't.
But you might be right. I mean, Lando probably had a better start on the initial start, but I think the Red Bull is just slightly out of reach anyway. It wouldn't have changed much, but it would have made it maybe slightly more exciting. I followed the times throughout the race, and I think Lando was keeping with Max, but every time he tried to attack, quote-unquote attack, and actually not manage the tires anymore, Max responded and was immediately faster by 3/10 at least. So I think McLaren is getting there, but we wouldn't have seen a duel at the front, like what we're all waiting for. But hopefully next year.
Yeah, I mean, it was the incident itself that happened was pretty severe. It was pretty aggressive. I think it boils down to a racing incident, like you said. I mean, these cars are so big. It's like you can't. I don't know if you can even blame K-Mag for having gone into Alex, right? Like, I don't, he was kind of trying to defend because Hulk was coming up on his side as well. And he pushed over a little bit too far to his right, which then created contact with Alex, if I'm remembering this correctly. And ultimately, it's just, you know, it's what's going to happen when you've got cars that are, you know, I want to make some sort of mom joke against someone, but I can't remember. Like, wider than someone's mom. I don't know who. Reminds me of, like, being on the school bus, you know. I think that's your mom, because that's weird, and your mom listens to this podcast, and we all love her.
Oh, thank you, thank you. You know, it's weird because these cars are big. We said they've got big rear ends. We'll say they've already changed the size of the mirror, right? They made the mirrors bigger, and there's clearly, like, blind spots that drivers are way too low, and if there's a driver next to them, they can barely see him. But if the driver's two cars in parallel to them, they won't even know they're there. And I don't think that's something you can fix. The only way I could see fixing that is having IndyCar style spotters. Mm. But it's so fast that I don't know if that
can even work. React, because IndyCar spotters are, I mean, really only useful on ovals even.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, because you have more time to understand that you've got a guy who's probably going to make a pass on you. Whereas, like, these guys are making decisions in, like, thousandths of a second.
Yeah, this happens way too, especially at the start. The start is kind of a lottery, and it's maybe, if I'm not blaming anyone, but if I were to say if things could have gone a little differently, I think K-Mag could have been a little bit more to the inside, but not blaming him at all.
Yeah, I think it's racing incident, but, you know, ultimately I want to get into the rest of the race. What I thought, Lando had a yet another incredible weekend, right?
Yeah, I think driver of the day again.
Yeah,
once again.
Yep. McLaren to me is, there's no other way, no other team that to me has shown such resiliency and also has made the biggest comeback from where they were at the beginning of the season, like.
Yeah,
hands down. I mean, we're seeing some interesting stuff from AlphaTauri right now, which we'll get into. But they're,
yeah, it's impressive in a different way. I'd say that McLaren just turned it around. They started the year with a car that was a shitbox. They said it. They knew they went in a wrong direction, and they said, "Hey, it's going to take us a long time to get back." And they had a schedule of upgrades that honestly worked perfectly. Sometimes you'll see teams that will come with upgrades, and they won't really correlate. McLaren, every time they brought upgrades, they shot up the order, and quite significantly. So fair play to them. And it was Norris's seventh podium of the year. That's as many as Alonso. And if you think about how he started the year, it's nuts. His 13th of his career, and he has a record that I don't think anyone wants in Formula One, is most podiums without a win. So hopefully that's right around the corner.
It's crazy to think he still doesn't have a win, man. Like,
yeah,
and like Piastri has his sprint win, but which I still don't really count as
asterisk.
Yeah, big asterisk.
But you know it hurt Norris though.
No. I continue
huge
week in and week out to be impressed by McLaren. A team that I wasn't impressed by this weekend is my team, my favorite team, Mercedes.
Oh, Mercedes.
Mercedes.
I don't know why I said it like that. We're in Brazil.
Dude, that is not a Brazilian accent. Yeah. I guess the biggest reason I'm frustrated is because I had Lewis winning the race.
For our stand championship,
and he was nowhere near that. George retired the car. You have a different opinion than I do. I think Merck learned a lot this weekend about the car that they currently have and the new design that they have going into 2024. So you think that they're the biggest loser of the weekend. I think they learned a lot for next year. But it's like, what the fuck, guys?
I think what they've learned this, not just this race, this year, in the last 2 years, is that their concept is wrong.
Right.
And if you're, I agree with you. They're learning from their mistakes, but I think we're all kind of shocked at what happened this weekend with Merck. Last year was their only win of the season, and they had a 1-2. They had incredible pace when Red Bull kind of stumbled and didn't get the setup right. This time it happened to Mercedes. They never could get the car in a window. The fact that they finished over a minute behind the leader in the end of the race, Lewis finished in P8, which is his worst finish in Interlagos, just shows you, I mean, the car is not a minute behind Red Bull in usual race configuration. It just shows you that they messed up, couldn't find the setup. Russell had to retire because of a power unit issue that they didn't want the engine to blow up on track, basically. Bad for PR. But I would only say they're the biggest losers in terms of points and pace, but I agree that all their focus is on next year. And if you saw Toto, he was just like done. Like his face is, there's no more emotion there. Just bring on the winter and let's regroup, get a new car.
Well, you know, it's interesting.
Let's go back.
I brought up AlphaTauri, but again, you know, when you're getting overtaken by AlphaTauri's as Mercedes in the way that you did this weekend. And granted, they finished above them, but still, there was a point in the race where Lewis just couldn't. The car just had nothing left on the straights.
Yeah,
there's nothing.
Barely. Yeah.
You know.
Apparently, Merck went with a high downforce setup that worked for them last year, and it just didn't work this year. For I don't know. I'm not an engineer once again, but it didn't. Their setup didn't stick this year, and they did get overtaken by AlphaTauri's in the sprint. And the tires also weren't lasting at all. And we saw it again. Russell, once again, difference between Russell and Hamilton, he just couldn't get the tires right. He kept pushing them in the beginning, saying, hey, let me through. But he ended up just ruining his tires anyway.
Well, that was another thing, too, that I thought was interesting is, like, George was on the radio basically saying, like, what are we doing? And they're like, we'll get back to you. Like, what? You're in the middle of a race. How do you not? I mean, that's some Ferrari shit. No offense. But like that is.
Yeah. Well, offense taken. but yeah, I was going to say that was very amateurish.
How do you. You've got your driver saying like, so are we racing each other? Are we doing something as a team? Like, you know, are we going strat A, strat B? What's the deal? And they're like, we'll get back to you on that, George.
Yeah, let's just say that it wasn't Merck's best weekend.
No, it really wasn't. And Toto
might have been the worst I've ever seen from
Toto said
Merck,
it was.
To be honest.
Toto said it was his worst, the worst weekend, his worst weekend as Mercedes boss. Which,
yeah, I could see that.
Which,
yeah,
frankly, says a lot because let's not forget Germany 2018.
Yeah, well, at least they had the pace, right?
Or was it 2018 or was that 2019?
2019.
That was 2019.
They put on
the costumes and just had a terrible weekend then, but it's really, really not good from them. And I think, you know, even in the press since the race, they've said what it's done is just confirmed that this year's concept is thrown out the window and the learnings that we've gotten are irrelevant to what we're doing.
Yeah.
They're starting new next year, which I think for Red Bull's sake is probably a bit, I would say, exciting, maybe not exciting, but encouraging, because they're like, oh, now these fuckers have to figure out another concept and they don't know if it's actually going to work yet.
Well, the thing is, everyone realized that Red Bull's concept is the way to go, and Red Bull's has been ahead of the curve for so long that they can only make that car better, right? So others can catch up, but unless they find something new to add to that, I mean, Red Bull still is going to have a huge advantage unless there's a magic bullet. Someone pulls a magic bullet like McLaren did or Aston Martin.
I mean, we'll see, man.
We'll see. Lewis is already ready to throw this car in the bin. He's like, yeah, this car, like, I'm done with it.
Well, it's interesting, too. Speaking of Red Bull, I mean, now we've got a battle on our hand for P2 and the drivers. You know, Checo finished P4. Lewis finished P8. And, you know, what that comes down to, too, is it does give Checo a little bit more of a points advantage in the battle for P2, but you know, while Lewis had a pretty abysmal weekend, all things considered,
horrendous.
Checo, I wouldn't say Checo had a terrible weekend. You know, finished P4. That battle with Fernando, and we'll get to him in a second, was unbelievable. Was in honestly, like, I don't think either driver, like, Checo was probably upset a little bit that he didn't finish on the podium. But he even said after the race, he was like, to go toe-to-toe with Fernando like that was super fun, and I really enjoyed
it. Yeah, he gave him credit, which he was very gracious in defeat. But yeah, first of all, Aston Martin, where did that come from, that pace? It seemed like if you came into the weekend, they switched cars with Merck, because you would expect the Merck to be fighting in those positions and Aston to be back in P8, right? You know, with the recent trend.
Totally right.
But Aston Martin just, that was part of my notes. I was like, wait, am I colorblind this weekend? but Aston Martin went back to its previous aero package because their updates didn't work, the recent updates. And it seemed to be back on track for them. I'm sure some of the upgrades were still there, and Alonso was on pace the whole weekend. And yeah, that battle was amazing. How smart Alonso is on that last turn, taking different lines in order to slow down Checo. He basically didn't hit the apex. He went deeper to allow him to kind of go full throttle before Perez with a slower car. I mean, that's racing IQ like through the roof. I mean, he's known to be one of the smartest drivers, and he showed why no other driver on the grid would have resisted to Checo this weekend, I think.
Oh, no. I mean, in that situation, I think maybe Lewis would have challenged a little bit there, but I don't think.
Don't think so.
Maybe that's just my bias. No, but that was, I mean, I got to say, it was big. That's some BDE from Fernando. And also, like, just the risk. I mean, he took a huge gamble on that to make that pass, because there was no, I mean, Checo.
I don't know where
Checo almost closed the door on him.
I don't know where that came from. Checo passed him on the last lap, and obviously there's a lot of DRS. This track is really good for slipstreaming. And I thought Alonso for sure was way too far. And the fact that he managed to stick within the DRS in that last section, I mean, Alonso, hey, you still got it. That's all I can say. And
he does.
We'll get to it later. I was kind of rooting for Checo because you got points for Checo in the stand championship there. So my heart was rooting for Alonso because I just love the driver, but my head was rooting for Checo for those points.
Mm-hmm. Well, I needed
but
him.
But hey, I needed him. And they only finished, what was it, 0.053, so 53 thousandths of a second. That photo finish was insane.
Crazy finish. I think Aston Martin benefited a little bit from the weather on Friday, if you don't mind me saying. You know, the red flag.
Probably a little bit.
I think they did. Mm-hmm. You know, Lance especially, though he had a solid weekend too. Can't take that away from him.
Let's give Lance some credit. He finished only 6 seconds behind Alonso, his teammate, in the race. And I think that was his best race of the year.
Yeah, it really was.
I'm going to throw that out there. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I say they benefited from the weather on Friday, but then they actually put the points on the board, right? And finished very well. You know,
who got screwed by the weather was really Norris, because he was quickest during qualifying. Yeah, and I really thought my prediction of him on pole was coming true, but the red flag changed things. But
certainly did, and I'm happy about that. Dude, well, we'll get to the stand championship shortly. So I think Lance, you know, good weekend from him. Fernando, I will say this, I have been insanely critical of him on this podcast in years past, especially when he was not racing and went to IndyCar and didn't qualify for the Indy 500. There have been moments, but
it's a long way of saying you're sorry.
Yeah, but I'm not sorry for what I said. I'm just saying,
oh, fair.
He's proven me wrong that he didn't, because my point was give a shot to some of these younger kids who are also talented, but you see moments like this from Fernando and you're like, this guy, like you said, this guy's still got it. And damn, man, like, that was some of the most exciting toe-to-toe racing we've seen this season. And I love that both drivers after the race were like, like had smiles on their faces. Even Checo. He was like,
yeah, they're pumped. Yeah,
yeah, they're like, that's the kind of racing that we want to have, you know. And they mm-hmm. were both super respectful, giving each other enough space, but equally as aggressive. And I love that.
Yeah, this track always gives us some great racing to the line. I remember Gasly a few years ago on Hamilton, and that battle reminded me of Schumacher versus Alonso at Imola 2005. If you haven't seen that, go watch the YouTube highlights where Alonso keeps like. Hit the Ferrari of Michael Schumacher behind him, and he even said like that might have been harder yep. than what I did back then. Yeah. But I think that's wrong, and I think Fernando is just patting himself on the back a little bit again. Like, just, you know, don't overdo it. We all agree that was an amazing race, but don't go too far.
Well, time changes everything, right? So it's been a while since that race, so 18 years. But you know, a team that. Another team who had a head scratcher of a weekend is your boys in red, Ferrari.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I thought I'd seen it all. And also, all right, so formation lap, Leclerc, who was qualified P2, had a shot of maybe a podium, bins it. And I immediately thought, wow, was that a Gromo? Because he has made driver errors in the past, but we need to clarify this once and for all. It was an electrical mishap on the car. He lost power steering and the rear axle locked up, so not at all his fault. But once again, Leclerc unlucky. He's the only driver, check this out, to DNS, which is to not start a race, DNF, which is not finishing, which has been quite often this season, and disqualified within the same season since Checo in 2012. Not a record you want, but a record nonetheless.
That's a set of stats, man. That's we haven't had a stat boy moment in a while.
Don't say I'm not I'm biased, because yeah, that one hurt when I read it, but I had to share it with you.
No, I mean that's harsh, and also
the weekend was harsh.
I thought you know, at first I thought Charles was warming up his tires and had a full gromo. I was like, oh my God. And then it was clear that something in the car broke. So.
Which to remind our new listeners, a gromo is when someone makes a mistake that is so pathetic and just so avoidable, like maybe accelerating too much and binning in on the formation lap, which is not what happened.
No.
Just to clarify.
No. And then you question.
I got you, Charles.
Then you question why that person has a seat in Formula One. But yeah, tough weekend for Ferrari. I mean, Fred Vasseur, his post race interview, he was kind of like, "We got to figure it out." It's just I you got to feel for Ferrari sometimes, but you got to also think like that was kind of an issue that didn't need to happen, right?
No, also a very similar situation to Mercedes, that clearly they're going a different direction next year. I think if Toto and Fred Vasseur are sharing a plane on the way back from Brazil, they're having a nice drink and thinking about next year already.
For sure. They're like, let's just throw this all out and get.
Yes. And I would love to be on that flight.
If there's an invite, extend it. But tough weekend for Ferrari. Curious to see what they can do in Vegas, but do want to quickly go through a little midfield roundup. I thought Pierre Gasly had a great weekend. I don't know about you.
What up? He did. Amazing.
Pierre drove a great race. What I was also curious to see is this AlphaTauri in the last three races has been shockingly good. Versus where they have been the rest of the season, and so I don't know if that it's clearly the car. I think having Danny Ric there is helping team morale a little bit, but they were the worst car on the grid grid for most of the season, and now they're battling to put Williams back to where I don't want to say where they rightfully belong.
Harsh.
Where they rightfully belong, but where they've been these last few seasons.
Which is, I mean, yeah, they're threatening to overtake Williams. So now with Tsunoda's 5 points during this race, they're inching in 7 points in two races not impossible, but if Danny Ric had scored points this weekend, which he might have if he didn't get involved in that first lap incident, which left him a lap down to begin with, because the reason why usually when there's a red flag, they let cars unlap themselves, but both him and Piastri went into the pits before the red flag, so they weren't, the regulations state that they don't get unlapped, right, which is just unfortunate, and it screws up your whole race. So no points for Piastri, obviously, and no points for Danny Ric. But yeah, I think Red Bull is really helping their sister team out because they don't want to be first and last on the other side. So yeah, watch out. There's pace in there, and it could get exciting because obviously Albon did not score points here. No. First lap incident, but yeah, except for that 1 point Logan scored. but it could be exciting. Those are the things that we're excited for in the last few races for sure. And yeah, double points for Alpine, which I know you like to say, who is Alpine? Or will the real Alpine please stand up? Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, Alpine is kind of a lock for that sixth constructors position at this point, right?
Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, there's no way they're going to get, they're mathematically, I think at this point.
No, you're absolutely right. I was laughing because their goal was P3 at the beginning of the year. Right. Yeah.
But I think what will be interesting to watch is this battle for the seventh position in the constructors, because there's only 12 points that separate Williams and Alfa Romeo, Williams, AlphaTauri, and Alfa Romeo. Alfa Romeo and Haas this weekend were just, I thought, irrelevant.
Double DNF for the Alfa Romeos, but Haas is just no pace. I'm sorry. Yeah. I just have nothing to say. I want to defend them. I know we're going to Vegas and everything, and ooh, yeah, American spirit, but yeah. Not an endorsement for the cigarettes, but yeah. Haas, get your shit together.
Yeah, it's just irrelevant to me. I don't think they're even really in the conversation to battle for that spot. I think Alfa Romeo, if they have a strong finish this season, who knows? Let's see. But yeah, man, I would like to see Williams finish in seventh. I would like to see
Me too.
And not see AlphaTauri overtake them, though. It's a fun battle. Another fun battle that's happening is our Stan Championship. And
that's right. My friend, there's been some movement here.
Lead by 6 points this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So it is now 371 points to my 345. And it's coming down to the wire, man. I mean, if we make some good or bad bets, I need two strong weekends coming up. But
yeah, well, we have a week off, so no predictions this week, right. But yeah, we'll get into the next race is a complete unknown and might be the craziest race of the year, just in terms of cringe, chaos, and just utter craziness.
I mean, we're gonna get into it on next week's episode, and I'm actually very excited to talk about Vegas, because I don't know what to expect, but I want to do a little bit more research into this track, what expectations are. It's going to be wild as fuck, man. I'm looking forward to having to next week's episode for the Vegas preview.
It's the only certainty that's going to be there will be things to talk about, even if it's mostly off track.
Yeah, exactly. Showgirls, gambling, mafia, who knows?
Hey, maybe Kimi Räikkönen will make an appearance.
Oh man, can you imagine? Kimi doesn't come back except for Vegas.
Please,
Kimi, please. But if you're not already following us on social media, we are at The Grandstand F1, and give us a review for the podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anywhere podcasts are available. But Viva Las Vegas, baby. We're going to Vegas.